And now, a different perspective. Lisa Wexler talks with activist Wayne Winston. Now, on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Welcome back to the show. Good morning, 203-333-3942. Wayne Winston joins us as he's here every single Wednesday. Hi, Wayne.
Good morning,
Lisa. Good morning. So, Wayne, I'm going to leave the floor to you a little bit. There were a lot of stories that you and I went back and forth on throughout the week. One of the things I think you wanted to talk about, we do have a clip, Jimmy Kimmel.
Yes.
Jimmy Kimmel was making fun of a speech. Was it a speech that, or was it a revelation that Donald Trump had? What was it about?
Well, there's two things. Nora O'Donnell on CBS did an interview with the Secretary of Defense.
Okay. Oh, Mark Esper.
Mark Esper.
And it was about his book, in which he had said something in his book.
Two things.
Yes.
That really stood out. One had to do with Mexico, and one had to do with BLM matters. I think if we have the clip, it would be great if we could play it.
Well, this is Jimmy Kimmel, I guess, hearing Mark Esper talking about his book.
Very good.
Here we go.
Yet another member of the Trump administration has written a book. His former Secretary of Defense, Mark Esper, was on 60 Minutes last night, sharing an almost impossible-to-believe anecdote about Trump's plan to handle Americans protesting outside the White House after the killing of George Floyd.
What specifically was he suggesting that the U.S. military should do to these protesters?
He says, can't you just shoot them? Just shoot them in the legs or something. And he's suggesting that that's what we should do, that we should bring in the troops and shoot the protesters.
Well, in fairness, he said the same thing about Eric.
The commander-in-chief was suggesting that the U.S. military shoot protesters.
Yes, in the streets
American
of our
protesters.
Nation's capital. That's right.
Former President Trump said this is a complete lie, and 10 witnesses can back it up. Mark Esper was weak and totally ineffective. And because of it, I had to run the military.
That's right. Captain Bonespurs had to run the military for Mark Esper. And we know that's a lie because unlike everything else he ran, the military didn't go bankrupt on his watch. It's really almost unfathomable that this imbecile was running our country. But that might not be the craziest story Esper told last night.
The president pulls me aside on at least a couple occasions and suggests that maybe we have the U.S. military shoot missiles into Mexico.
Shoot missiles into Mexico for what?
He would say to go after the cartels.
You politely push back on the idea. Did President Trump really say no one would know it was us?
Yes.
No one would know it was us. Could have been anyone. Could have been Canada. Could have been Puerto Rico. Could have been the Mexicans bombing themselves. This is a recurring fantasy of Trump's. You know, last month he suggested we put Chinese flags on our fighter jets and go bomb the Russians in Ukraine. Of course they would know it was us. Our missiles literally have the word us written on the top of them.
That's Jimmy Kimmel putting it all together. So, Wayne Winston, I'll let you have the floor.
You know, the tragic part of this, and you know, Kimmel's an amazing, the way they put these stories together from news stories, and they don't just pick on, you know, the Republicans, they pick on everybody, Chappelle, you name it. And we're in a time in this country where who sits in power matters as much as it did in the 50s and the 60s and civil rights and so on. I think it was pretty frightening when he talked about, should we shoot missiles into Mexico? I mean, now this is from a news broadcast that CBS News did, and, you know, hey, left and right and all this other stuff. I mean, these are things that Mike Esper, he's in charge of our United States military, everything. And he's saying, let's just try this, as he's saying, hey, put me aside a couple times. When you're that angry or you're not that clear thinking and somehow hitting the button is the answer, in something like that, with the far-reaching repercussions that a goat can figure out, it's a scary thing. And then we take it a step further, and then he talks about, can't we just shoot the Black Lives Matters? I watched that whole interview, and part of it, he fills in that he was frustrated at what was going on.
You mean the 60 Minutes interview you watched with Mark Esper?
Yes. And what it is he was saying how the president was very frustrated about the whole country. Remember, there was protests everywhere.
That's true.
And he couldn't control them. He couldn't stop them. So his thing was, okay, we just go in and we use weapons. So we talk about shooting Black Lives Matter protesters, whether you agree with them or disagree with them. That's a significant thing to say, take the military and shoot American citizens. So, you know, I think no matter what party you're from, that matters. We have elections going on, mm-hmm. and we have people who are West Virginia. They're supporting candidates to go, hey, I'm in line with this. So understand if that's your camp, I get it. But understand that that's the camp that you're in, and you get all the things that go with that. And when people like that are elected, we all pay the price because this is not about the America that was promised. And that's what Black people have been fighting for. And for Jewish people been fighting for, to have the America that was promised, that's equal, and see us in such a way that we're human beings and not just something to be toyed with. And the final tie-in is we've often said, not just on this show, but across the country, if those were Black people that tried that insurrection, it would have been bodies littered all over the Capitol. And I think this even backs it up. In fact, I'm sure of it. Because there's a tolerance for them, because they're seeing as Americans, even though we disagree with them, they're expressing what their hopes and their fears and, you know, what's going to happen to this country because Donald's out. But no one was shooting them off walls. That's how the destruction happened, and how far down that rabbit hole we go. More and more of this information is coming out through investigations, independent parties that say we have a problem here in America. I'm very concerned about where we are. I want my kids to be safe.
We're chatting with Wayne Winston. I'm Lisa Wexler, 203-333-9422. You're welcome to be part of the conversation. We're going to be right back here on WICC.
And now, a different perspective. Lisa Wexler talks with activist Wayne Winston. Now, on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
Senator.
Yeah. And it'll be...
And welcome back to the show, 203-333-9422. We're going to turn to some local conversations. Wayne Winston is here with us. Wayne, I saw yesterday that at a local political convention for state senate, Dennis Bradley, who is facing charges of wire fraud, but still maintains that he is qualified to be the state senator, he only got 9 votes. He was significantly outvoted by a Reverend Heron Gaston. I don't know Mr. Gaston. Can you tell me about him? Do you know him?
Yes, he's a pretty amazing guy. And actually, I know both candidates. And Heron is new in the political arena.
Okay.
You know, he currently works for the city of Bridgeport. He is very...
The city of Bridgeport?
Yeah.
What does he do?
He does. He's in administration, you know, within the... I'm not sure of his job, so let me get that wrong. But he is an administrator for the city of Bridgeport.
For the city of Bridgeport.
Yes.
Is he appointed by Mayor Gannon?
I'm not sure if he's an appointee, so.
Okay. He works for the city. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And, but he is his own guy. Anyone has the right to run. And I think I want to make it clear that that's where he is right now. Like many people, he wants to see some change. And I know the gentleman he's running against, you know, Mr. Bradley, is also a friend of mine. And this is the hard part when you live in a city in politics.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to run against somebody that you know.
Sure.
It's
very
difficult.
Think that Mr. Bradley, because he is facing wire fraud charges, do you think that he should be running?
Well, Dennis is innocent until proven guilty.
Absolutely. That's why I'm asking, though. Do you think he should be running?
Well, he has the right to do so. And I think what he's hoping for, and in talking to him, he's very sure that he'll get vindication.
Okay.
And if he has vindication, then it's going to be a very tight horse race.
I see.
Because both are very
popular. Will he have it
popular.
In time for November?
Well, that's why I believe his case comes up later this month,
okay.
May.
Okay.
And then we'll see how that goes. But, you know, he's very adamant about when the facts come out, because we all deserve our day in court.
Sure.
That it'll lean in his favor, and it'll give him a chance to get in there.
So he has earned the right to primary.
Yes.
Do you have any inside information about whether or not he will primary?
For all intents and purposes, from what I see, he's going to be in it whatever way.
So that means he will primary.
So, yes.
There is also another woman who is named Julie Mar Ortiz. She received two delegate votes, and she says she wants to petition her way onto the ballot because she did not get the 15% that automatically allows her to primary. Do you know her?
Vaguely. Okay. But again, here's another Bridgeporter wanting to make a difference. I can say Gaston is ahead of a large church here in Bridgeport. He's graduated from Yale. Pretty smart guy. You know, I mean, great background. He's got a pretty good vision as well. I like when there's competition to run for office. I think.
So you like primaries?
I do.
You know, it's interesting. We had Michael Ray on the other day, and he was a delegate to the Democratic Convention.
Mm.
And his opinion was that primaries are good for the party because it draws more attention to the candidates in the party and it activates the base.
Yes.
But other people have come on. We had Alexis Harrison, who's a Republican, and she said that she thought that, and she said this as a result of being at the convention where they were jockeying for votes and the candidates were talking down each other, that she thought that a primary could be divisive and not good for the party. And Matt Lesser, in backing out from the Secretary of State, said he was backing out of the Democratic because he didn't think a primary was good for the party. So it's interesting that all these people involved in politics have different views of whether a primary is good or bad for their party. It's interesting.
Well, I think it depends on what's going on with you at the time. And honestly, look, that's the Democratic way. In fact, if anything, that's the
Democrats' what Michael Ray said.
Primary problem. Our problem is Democrats are, quote, left, if you want to call us that, getting away, you know, with the tags. We have a problem because we listen to everybody. Sometimes we bring in too many, and it can convolute the whole thing. My Republican counterparts, GOP, you know, they basically squeeze down a message, and they can shoot that out all across America.
You think Republicans are better at delivering a message than Democrats are?
I think they're better at coming up with a message, right or wrong, and they'll carry it, and they'll say it over and over and over
again.
That's
what I mean. You think they're better at the messaging?
Yeah, well, I don't know that it's better, but they're willing to carry that message, even if they don't necessarily agree with it, because you talk to me in the back, I don't really agree with it. But when you're in front,
you think that they're a more cohesive party. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes, they look at it as this statement, this is what represents our parties. These green bananas represent our parties. You're going to talk about green bananas no matter what.
I see.
Even if they find out, made some people sick, we're still with the green bananas. The Democrats really brings so much to the table, so many different perspectives. You know, you have ones who are very conservative, you have some that are moderate, you have all different type. And when they come up and talk, it creates a bigger dynamic to come to a consensus. But that's what I like about them.
Okay.
You know? So there's Republicans I like. Not the extremists that want to take over the world, but there's Republicans that I like. There's some conservatives. There are conservative Democrats. I hate the tagging. Somebody called last week. I hate the tagging. What's the tagging? Right or left?
Mm-hmm.
Most people are in the middle. They're a little
bit
of both.
Of course they are.
Because that's, to me, you're saying to me, you want me to be either extremely this or extremely that. And the truth
well, that's
is
why so many
both.
People get fed up with politics. It's very interesting to hear from Karenna Gore. I don't know if you heard the interview that came on right before you were here, Wayne Winston. But it was interesting how she, and after all, this would be natural, her father was elected by the popular vote to be president, but he wasn't president, right? Because
yes.
of the Electoral College and because of Bush v. Gore, 5-4 vote in stopping the recount in Florida. But when you hear her talk about politics, she was very discouraging and and negative about it, which you could understand.
Absolutely.
But on the other hand, politics is what brought her family fame and fortune, you know? I mean, her grandfather, wasn't it her grandfather, Al Gore's dad, who was also a biggie woo-woo in Tennessee?
Yes.
And I would never say this to Karenna to her face, at least on the air. I might say it to her face if we were in a different setting, but I would never say it on the air. But she was telling how her father, Al Gore, is obviously retiring or retired on a farm in Tennessee. If Tennessee had voted for him, he would have been president.
Well said.
His own people didn't vote for him.
And that's unfortunate because it's all about timing. And here he was.
They still wouldn't vote for him today. Tennessee's even more Republican now than they were then.
Well,
Forget about it.
Yeah, maybe it was before the last 4 years because it changed a lot before. These 4 years has been life-changing, to America, the way we're looking at stuff.
203-333-9422. We're on the air with Wayne Winston. All right, so let's just go focus a little bit back because I went away from this. So with respect to Bridgeport, it looks like there'll be a primary contest for the state Senate. There was another story today about Bridgeport, which had to do with the budget. Bridgeport Council seeking ways to pass its budget. According to Brian Lockhart, who's a very reputable reporter in the Connecticut Post, he said last night Mayor Ganim and city council members spent last night trying to outmaneuver, his words, each other over final passage of a municipal budget. And Mayor Ganim prevailed, quote, at least temporarily, while council leaders were pledging to announce a strategy today to supplant his fiscal plan with theirs. What is at stake? The budget in Bridgeport is over $605 million. It's a huge budget. Mm-hmm. And some of the things that were at odds were the hiring of three aides to help the legislative body act more, quote, independently of the administration, and the elimination of the five roles of so-called political patronage employees who, again, this is Brian Lockhart, his writing in the Connecticut Post, who have supported or who have close ties to Ganim and or the Democratic town chair, Mario Testa. Have you got any inside dope for us on this? What's going on in Bridgeport?
Well, just that the two sides, apparently, you know, with Mayor Ganim, they're feeling he created a budget that's going to happen automatically, and they didn't get a chance to, you know, put forward their budget, talk about the pieces that are in it. So for them, that's a big conflict.
I don't understand. Why would something get passed automatically? Isn't the process something that is a give and take?
There is, but I can't say as I don't understand how that happened either, but that's what their Lockhart's talking about, and that's why it becomes an issue, because the town council says, hey, we have to discuss this stuff.
I see.
And see what's going on, and we have our own budget that we would like to have, you know, instead of in parcel two, or have a discussion about what we're going to keep and what we're not going to keep. So that's where you get who thinks what is what. But that key thing that it's supposed to kick in is what became the issue that has the city council now figuring out how they can sort that out.
Wayne Winston, I didn't ask you this off air. I probably should have. Were you a delegate to the state convention?
I was not.
You were not. Are you going to be a delegate to any political convention this season?
No, you know, I'm sitting it out a little bit. I mean, there's a lot going on.
Have you been a delegate before?
And, some years back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and I think people that have not had that experience, it really is pretty
amazing.
Wonderful,
yeah.
Amazing,
Michael
exciting.
Ray loved it. He thought it was fantastic.
Man. And meeting people from all over the state and so on, it's really pretty phenomenal. And getting that energy of, yay, my candidate, or even if you lose, ooh, you don't want that.
Right,
but
right.
It's an amazing thing and a blessing to be able to be a part of that.
Totally, totally. All right, a couple of other news stories that are just around here. Have you been noticing the extraordinary amount in the many, many thousands of applications for cannabis licenses? Have you been following that story?
Yeah.
And yeah. The latest today, Greenwich Time reporting that the Stamford Cannabis Dispensary got a zoning approval for recreational and medical sales pending a state license. You know that the law that was passed is intended to allow previously disenfranchised people, in other words, poor people, people of color, to get these licenses, which are expected to become very profitable businesses. Mm. I think something like 15,000 applicants.
Wow.
Like unbelievable amount of applicants.
Oh.
I'm just wondering, in your community and in your dinner table conversation, what do you think about all this?
Well, there's... Black people are pretty conservative across the board. I mean, you have some entrepreneurs, some folks who are feeling like this is going to level the playing field based upon how many people have been incarcerated for selling marijuana. So by decriminalizing it, you're really helping the community because they're not, you know, the...
they're not being singled out for smoking a weed.
Smoking
a joint, whatever.
So you can get some time to fix your job and so on and so forth. But this is open basically to everyone.
Yes.
You know, so... It's going to be a huge windfall, and you still kind of get into who's going to have the most money.
But in your community, do you like the idea that you'll be able to buy pot for recreational purposes on the streets of Bridgeport or Stratford or Trumbull or wherever?
I would prefer not having it.
You would prefer not?
I think there's enough challenges out there. I think it's for me, that going to a doctor or going to some place where they can prescribe it makes more sense than basically stopping down and buying. Because recreational, I mean, whatever you put there, I mean, come on, there's 100 ways to get it, and it's got nothing to do with medication. But, you know, it's a done deal.
I know, and it's a done deal.
You know, and it's a bitter.
The next deal is going to be for my control over the streets and the smell. The pervasive smell of skunk everywhere. It's taken over Manhattan like crazy. And my own personal opinion is I'm going to want to see some police enforcement for smoking it on the street. Because the smell is repulsive to me.
I think there's, as you get into things, that there's some things that you can revisit them and say, yeah, we kind of missed that whole idea. I know some people who are hiring people. They come in smelling like marijuana. And now in our state, you're like, well, you can't. Not hiring because there's
that's a really good point.
Now.
Can you make them go wash their hair and hands before they come on the floor?
People,
you're right, they stink.
People, they do crazy stuff. But I do want to leave on a prayer for abortion, that we are able to have a woman's right to choose. I think that's the most universal thing right now.
Wayne, this issue is not going away.
I know it is not.
It's going to become bigger than ever.
It is. It is.
I'm Lisa Wexler. We'll see each other next week, and I will see you back behind the mic. Norm Pattis up from 12 to 2, and Paul Pacelli from 2 to 6.